Noble Dairy Queen's new summer blizzard menu is back, and it is stacked. Dive right into the summer celebration with their new peanut butter cookie dough party blizzard. You can sink your red spoon into their world-famous DQ soft serve, filled with delicious chunks of chocolate chip cookie dough, swirls of creamy peanut butter topping, and peanut brittle crunch with sprinkles. If the peanut buttery flavor isn't your jam, their fresh take on cobbler a la mode certainly will. Say hello to the Picnic Peach Cobbler Blizzard. You can also let your taste buds crumble with the Ultimate Cookie Blizzard that features Oreo, Chips Ahoy, and Nutter Butter pieces. Dairy Queen knows everyone loves a good comeback, and fan favorite Blizzard flavors Frosted Animal Cookie, Brownie Batter, and Cotton Candy have made their triumphant return. Summer Blizzard flavors are now available at your Noble Dairy Queen stores with locations in Kankakee, Bourbonnais, Moments, and Manteno. Happy tastes good.
People tend to stick to you after time. Places tend to do the same as we do.
Hello and welcome to Kankakee Podcast, where we talk about the people and places of Kankakee County. I'm Jake Lamore, and today's episode is the first of what I hope to be many of a series we are deeming Yarn Factory Listeners. It's a brand new storytelling event that was birthed by Bill Yonka, Mr. Kankakee. And Bill and I sat down a couple months ago. He was telling me about this event he wanted to create, where once a month we get about six people together to tell personal stories, about 8 to 10 minutes each, and share something fascinating about their life. Or actually, it could be someone else's life, but usually these stories are very personal. And I told them I wanted Kankakee Podcast to be a part of it because that's what we do here. We tell the stories of the people and places of Kankakee County, and I just thought this would be really, really cool. So the very first Yarn Factory Listeners event took place on Tuesday, April 9th at Flanagan's Pub in downtown Kankakee. That's in the basement of the Majestic, and I was just blown away by the six storytellers that stood up and told stories. They were all very captivating, and they were all very interesting, all very unique, too, in their own different way. And each story made me think something different. It just, each one struck me in a different way, and I truly loved it and was just walked away from the event with just this positive energy. And it made me want to do something awesome myself. And it inspired me to look at my life differently and just to look at everyday people that I run into here on the streets in Kankakee County, look at them differently and realize that everyone has their own special, unique story. It was truly just a wonderful night. So what you're about to hear is the stories that were told that night. Unfortunately, not all six are going to be part of this episode. There was one storyteller that did not want their story shared, and of course, we respect him for that. But I do want to give a shout out to him, which is Scott Whitehair, a storyteller from Chicago, actually. He was the only one that was included in the event on April 9th that was not from the Kankakee area. But man, his story was so good. And if you ever want to hear him speak, he does a series up in Chicago, and I believe it's called Story Lab Chicago. He probably does a bunch of other events. But anyway, look up Scott Whitehair when you get the chance. Really amazing guy, really amazing storyteller. But I've got five stories to share with you today. The storytellers we are going to be hearing from today include Tamika A. Talley, Deb Terrell, Alexandra Avens, Terry Streetman, and Damika J. Rosenthal. Those are the five storytellers that you are going to hear on this episode of Kankakee Podcast. And just so you don't miss the future Yarn Factory listener events, the next one is going to be Tuesday, May 14th. It's at 7 p.m. Once again, at Flanagan's Pub on Schuyler and Kankakee. It's absolutely free. And until further notice, the Yarn Factory listeners is going to meet every single second Tuesday of the month. So once a month, the second Tuesday of every month. Before we get into our very first story, I want to thank Bill Yonka so much for letting Kankakee Podcast capture these events, and also to Flanagan's Irish Pub, Kankakee Public Library, and Skylar Brinkman as well from Flanagan's for working with us on this event. I'm really excited to hear more stories, and I hope that you take away something from at least one of these incredible stories that you're about to hear. And also a shout out to all of the storytellers that were brave enough to get up in front of a live audience and share these stories. And also thank you for giving us the permission to reshare these stories with you right now on Kankakee Podcast. Yarn Factory listeners, number one.
Hey, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. So, first of all, thanks. Thanks for taking a chance on something that you weren't really sure about, maybe, or that was something new, that was something unusual. And we appreciate you doing that. We ask during this, this is one of the big things, is about the kind of culture of this, is that we stop for a second and listen to each other. How often do you really get listened to? A lot of times when I'm talking to Steve, he's saying something, and I'm thinking about what I'm going to say back to him, something witty, something he's going to enjoy, but I'm not listening to Steve because I'm thinking about what Bill's going to say, because Bill's got to say something pretty funny. Not the idea of tonight. So the idea of tonight is to stop and listen to each other. And we turned off the TVs. We made a sign on the door. It says, enter quietly if you can. And so much of this, really, I fell in love with doing a storytelling event in Chicago. And Scott Whitehair is here from Chicago. I invited him down because I really enjoyed crafting a story and taking the time to do it, as you very rarely do that. Like, well, how would you tell a story if you knew people were going to listen to you the entire time? Would you add more details? Would you add like the texture and interesting things that you find so much fun about it? Yeah, you would. So we're going to enjoy people doing that tonight. And I love bringing together people here in our community who may not know each other and now sharing something special in this time. So if you have like one of those cell phone devices, you can put it on silent. Are you familiar with the term turkey? So it's a, you know, you Thanksgiving, but you don't want to be the turkey of the event by having your cell phone go off. I was doing it at one of these recently, and someone's cell phone went off, and I was looking around the room, and it was a friend of mine. So we don't want to have that happen, so turn your cell phone off. And if you need to use a restroom, or if you need Skyler to get you something else to drink, do that in between or during an intermission. We got an intermission after the third storyteller. So let's welcome our first person up to the stage. And, you know, the way we're going to do this is we're going to listen enthusiastically yet quietly and then celebrate them. Like, it really, like, celebrate the story they tell to us tonight. Our first storyteller is Tamika Talley. She's the proud mother of three, the oldest sister of seven, and the favorite aunt of 24. All 24. every single one of those 24. She is a Village of Sun River Terrace trustee and Kankakee County Housing Authority board member commissioner. She's employed as a Safe Center manager for Pembroke School District. Tamika hosts the Art of Storytelling open mic platform every third Sunday at the River Rock Beer Garden. And she is a co-owner of the Easy Outdoor Movie Theater with her children. She provides outdoor movie series to Sun River Terrace and Hopkins Park during the summer months. For fun, she enjoys bike riding and roller skating, not simultaneously. Let's give her a warm welcome to Tamika Talley.
Bring this up a little bit. You might not believe this, but people call me short. Talking about. Okay, so I did not memorize my story. Before I start, I want to ask this group, because it seems mature, I want to give a shout out to all of the people in the room who have adult children. Can you please make some noise? Can you please promise me it gets better? I'm just getting here, but I love them. I love them. But I see why the adult stage is later, because if it was first, I wouldn't be a parent. So as Bill mentioned, I am the host of a open mic nights, but it's a bit of, it's called the Art of Storytelling, but it primarily focuses on poetry and spoken word. So thank you so very much. In the true sense of that, if you don't mind, I'm going to start my piece with a poem. All right. It's called Deja Vu. You may have heard this before. Get it? I'm young and I'm old. I'm rich and I'm poor. I feel like I've been on this earth many times before. Once I was a white gazelle on a horseback riding free, searching in the darkness for just a piece of me. And I can feel this for sure, I've been here before. I used to be a queen, you know, on an island by the sea with a rainbow-colored people, happy as can be. They never had a problem, and it never was a care, and their love was ever flowing, and its feeling, it was shared. And I can feel this for sure, I've been here before. Huh. You want to know why it's interesting? I didn't do that. It was the eclipse.
Saturdays were made for creating, and Little Me's studio on South Main Street in Bourbonnais gets that, so that's why they have open studios Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's where your kids can drop in unannounced, practically. No registration is needed. You can pay at the door, and this is for kids 1.5 years old to 12 years old. And what you do is you drop in, you pick a project, and you let the creativity begin. Now, some of those activities include pre-sketched canvas painting, slime making, who doesn't love making slime, friendship bracelets, tote bag design, preschool art stations, and more. This happens most Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Make sure you bring the kids 45 minutes before closing to make sure they have plenty of time to create. Little Me Studio at 441 South Main Street in Bourbonnais. Across from Olivet Nazarene University, if you have any questions or you want more information, you can always call or text 815-507-2051 or follow Little Me Studio on Facebook and Instagram at Little Me Studio.
I'm glad you asked me that. Why is it interesting? So I thought about it. I thought I'd get this question deeper into my career, into my retirement, but it's always the first question y'all come up with. So she asks with so much well-trained passion, "Well, you're quite literally a legend. You know, you've got, even though you've moved on, your diehard fans and your younger generations are still moved by the music you made, and many of them are reliving it for the first time they heard it, and others wish they'd been alive when you were actively recording and performing." And yeah, that may be true. But for me, I'm a whole woman, okay? The question of not whether I miss it, or you might as well ask me, are your glory days behind you, or do you miss being somebody? And I'm just as whole now, chasing my grandkids around the house, picking up their socks, or tending to my herb garden in the backyard, or smoking reefer with my adult kids. I'm just as whole doing that as I was sliding across the stages. I know some of you look uncomfortable because I mentioned reefer, but ask me if I care. So she asked me if I imagined this life for myself when I was a teen. And I had to remind her, I've been here a million times before. Press junkets out the ass, and I've said the wrong things as many times as I said the right. And it's not even wrong anymore. Not now, not at this age, not at this stage. I remember one time when I was 15 and I climbed into the bed with my parents and looking at my mom and daddy and trying to explain that I want to die when I'm 60. And my mom looked at me weird like, why 60? And I'm explaining in my infinite knowledge at 15 that it's so old. You're going to smell like mothballs. And it's just sitting at a nursing home eating red Jell-O, looking out the window and having chin hairs that you're just too feeble to pluck out. At 60, it just didn't sound like I still have the voice I needed to trill across stadiums and send shockwaves through packed arenas and church pews. And so 60 was needing a cane when you used to move across the stage like the Holy Ghost caught you slipping. And no, I wanted to die young while I was still beautiful and moving and lean and mean. My mom and dad looked at each other, looked at me and laughed, and didn't have the heart to tell me I was foolish, because I found out one day. But to answer your question, nope, I don't miss it. I don't miss the road. People think that just because you get old that you miss everything about being young, but young danced this turn with me. I remember it fondly, but I don't miss it. The rank bus bathrooms when we started doing well, or I don't miss squatting on the side of the road when we weren't doing so well, when we were just getting started. Nobody let us use the facilities for 30 and 40 miles at a time. I don't miss sitting straight up like a cat because I don't want to mess my hair up with my rollers. I don't miss the handsy drummer that found his way to my seat in the middle of the night on a tour bus. But a second time, he made his way to my seat and went up under my skirt. This time I tore his palm up. He had to explain. Well, he couldn't explain how in the middle of the night he got a mangled hand. And he left the tour because, hey, how could he play? But nobody asked me nothing, and I didn't say nothing when he left. By 78, I've had my fill of the tour life, and that's just the truth. I was 34 and an old maid by all of the standards that mattered. And it was more to life than singing back up. But don't get me wrong. Singing back up was some of the greatest, was my greatest honors in life, especially Sam Bailey. So you want to know why I say especially Sam Bailey? Well, Sam plucked me from obscurity in 1959 at a gas station. I was out gallivanting. That's what we called it back then. I was out gallivanting with some friends headed to the Elks dance, and we had to stop by for cigs. And I can't remember who was on the radio. I can't remember, but that was blasting, and I was singing, and everybody was dancing. And I remember Cheryl Mathis dancing so much, she broke the heel on her shoe. And then Sam rolled up in a Rolls Royce and made my heart stop, like to knock my socks off. Everybody else was stunned silent, but not me. I sang, and I danced, and I looked Sam right in his eye as he got out the car. And then he pumped the gas, and I'm still singing, and I'm still dancing. And he took a step towards me, and eventually he made it over to my car. I only shut up when he held his hand up for silence. "Girl, you sing like that is sicko. I wonder what you would do. What's down your throat for a 10-city tour? He took off his hat and pretended to swap me with it. And, of course, his little yes man, they giggled a lot, squealed. And heat was rising from, let's say, my toes. And growing up, I hadn't really dreamed of anything, really. I thought I might be a music teacher and just call it a life. But a song at a gas station on the radio on a real lucky night did something to my life that I could never have dreamed of. Dreams and nightmares. And Sam was the catalyst for the whole journey. I love him always and forever. But being together is the part that never lasts forever. So, I want you to know I sang through the Jim Crow days. I sang through Vietnam. I sang through Reaganomics. And I'm tired now. These young girls can have it. It takes too much to be a backup singer now. And half of them can't really sing. All they have to do is breathe like a star and buy a booty and wind they poor little hips. And we did some good old singing back in the day. And we danced till we were out of breath, and you wanted a show, we gave you one, and without a sight, costumes to match. But nope, I don't remember. I don't miss it, though. I just want to hold on to the memories that we made while I still have the good sense to do that. And I'll pass them on to the next star. She'll do something with them. First class. Are we done here? That's my piece.
Let's give Tamika another big round of applause. Thank you, Tamika. Our second storyteller tonight is Deb Terrell. Deb is a longtime resident of Kankakee. She and her husband, Bill, raised a family here. She was a longtime columnist for the Daily Journal and now spends her time serving on the Kankakee Planning Board, traveling to visit farmers markets across the country, and buying too many plants for her garden. Let's welcome to the stage Deb.
Hi. Very nervous. Be gentle with me. It's one thing to write a story. It's another thing to tell it. They say when you get to be my age that you should try new things. Well, it was either this or jumping out of a plane. Right now, I wish I was jumping out of a plane. My story is about old men and a dog named Play-Doh. When I was a child, I lived with my grandparents. We lived in a very small town in rural Indiana. It was the 1950s. We lived on the edge of town where the houses gave way to meadows, pastures, and a meandering creek. And from the time I could walk or ride my bike, I explored, usually looking for someone to talk to. My first and best old man was my grandpa. I followed him everywhere. I was his shadow. We went to Grange Hall meetings. I doubt if there's anybody here old enough to know what a Grange Hall is. We went to barn sales. We went to the lumber yard, and I worked with him in the garden. We would drive out to Amish farms to buy meat, eggs, produce, and dairy. And on Sundays, we would drive all over the county looking at farm fields. Every Sunday. And sometimes Grandpa would pull up along the edge of the field and we would get out and walk the perimeter of it. And he would teach me things about the fields. He taught me that you could look at the weeds that were growing in a field and tell a lot about the soil that you would find there. He couldn't abide what he called a dirty field. A dirty field is a bean field, basically, with some corn coming up in it from last year. That farmer was sloppy, and he would shake his head and he would say, "I guess he's growing succotash." He taught me how to tell when a soybean was ready for harvest. He would reach down and pluck one of the hairy brown pods. Each one contained two seeds. He would hand one to me, and he would say, "Now put it between your teeth and bite down, and it should crack clean in two. Not just dent, but not crush or crumble, but crack clean in two. Then it's just about right for harvest." Grandpa had jokes, too. When we were driving in the countryside, and a big bug would splat against the windshield, he would look down at me and grin and say, "I'll bet he won't have the guts to do that again." Mr. Rhenish lived on the very edge of town, and Mr. Rhenish upholstered furniture. Next to his house was a little wooden shack. Unpainted, weathered wood, had a little tiny door, little tiny window. There was a boulder there to step up to the door, and a little crooked stovepipe like something a child might draw. And in that shack, he worked. And I would sit and talk to him while he worked. People would bring him something like an old ottoman covered in needlepoint or an old wingback chair covered in worn cotton velvet. And he would take that off and replace it with something new called naugahyde. Naugahyde was sort of a cross between leather and plastic. The cloth was very heavy, and he would roll out the big bolt on his work table and pick up what I thought were giant scissors. And he would start to cut, but he would always look at me. He was a man of few words. I think I did most of the talking. But he would look at me and say, "Measure twice and cut once." He also chewed tobacco, and I loved watching him spit the long streams of brown tobacco juice into a spittoon that sat in the corner at great accuracy. He never mowed his grass, and it grew very tall. And on summer days when it was hot, I loved lying in the grass next to his shed, listening to the locusts and watching the grass wave over my head in the breeze.
How can you be relaxing on that new Tempur Ergo Pro Smart base when Frank's Appliance Center and Sleep Source has so much going on?
Shh, I'm winding down with this new soundscape technology in this Tempur-Pedic base. Come. Join me.
Not all of us can practice retirement. Someone has to work to mark down all the display mattresses and appliances for the big sale.
You need to chill out. Stress is not good for you. Come on, try this new base from Tempur-Pedic. It will change your life.
Okay, fine. You want me to relax? I'll relax. Happy?
Stephanie Ann, are you seriously sleeping with all this work to do? Boy, I'm never going to be able to retire with all your self-care time.
What? Oh, man, that adjustable base is dangerously good. Everyone should have one of those. And with free financing, it's definitely affordable.
Finding it hard to wind down and relax? Stop by Frank's Appliance Center and Sleep Source to try the new Tempur Ergo Pro Smart Base. Now is the time to invest in you.
Your neighborhood expert.
Mr. Whistler lived across the alley. He was an iris hybridizer, and I spent many, many, many days watching him work. He had great rows of iris all around his house in a rainbow of colors, and he would dig the rhizomes, trim them, put them in bushel baskets to sell. He used a small paintbrush to transfer the pollen from one flower to another to hybridize them. He once allowed me to do that, but I dropped the brush. He taught me how to remember the names of the flower parts. The stigma was sticky. The petals that stood up were called standards, and the petals that hang down are called falls. And that little woolly worm on the side, that brightly colored thing, was called a beard. Mr. Manor, despite his name, lived in the junkyard. He was the local junk man, the original recycler. He drove an old battered pickup truck with wooden sides that was always overflowing with things that no one else wanted. But he found a place for them on his property. His property was a mishmash of weeds, sunflowers, there were always sunflowers, and old things. There were old tractors, rusty bicycles, chairs without seats, old appliances, anything that people didn't want, he found a place for until he found somebody who did want it. And he used to always tell me, "Debbie, watch the nickels and the dollars take care of themselves." He had a chicken coop, too, and I was terrified of the chickens. He told me that I could take as many eggs as I wanted home to my grandma, but when you try to take an egg from a chicken, they peck at your hands. But I got pretty adept at finding them unattended. I would find an egg in an old flower pot or in the seat of a tractor, one time in an old refrigerator. And I would put them in the hem of my shirt, and I would take them home to my grandma. Now, old Enos Holler lived a little further into town, and I generally rode my bike to get to his house. Enos lived in a craftsman house, painted brown, with a very wide front porch, and he could always be found there whittling. He would go into the woods and find long sticks and turn them into walking sticks or canes. He had two sons, Sock and Cy, who were also farmers, and he had an old brown dog that always laid at his feet, and that dog's name was Play-Doh. He always asked me about school. He wanted to know what I was learning, what I was reading. "What are you reading, Debbie? What are you reading?" And he gave me a copy of Gene Stratton Porter's Girl of the Limberlost. That became my favorite book during childhood. When Enos's wife, Maud, would come out to call him in for supper, I knew it was time for me to leave. Maud was a sharp-faced woman who rarely smiled, and she, like the other women in town, knew that I came from literally the only broken home in town, and that I lived with my grandparents because my mom ran off and she was an adulteress. She had no use for me. But the old men, they never judged me. They gave me the space and the grace to be me, not my mother. They allowed me to be a child full of curiosity and questions and stories. I might have been pretty lonely had it not been for all of those old men. The kids in town were discouraged from playing with us as well. Had I played with all of the kids in town, I might have learned things like how to ride my bike with no hands, or I might have learned how to flatten a penny on the railroad tracks. Or I might have learned wonderful songs like Great Big Gobs of Greasy Grimy Gopher Guts. But I didn't. I learned pearls of wisdom. I learned how to have a conversation with an adult. These things have stayed with me throughout my life in ways that I'm still discovering. And these men informed my life in ways that come to me over and over, over the years. When I became an adult and these men were long gone, I learned things about them that I had not known as a child. Now, I knew my grandpa pretty well, of course. He informed my love of gardening and all things gardening. He taught me all of the basic principles of being a good steward of the land. And I can still hear him today whenever I plant anything. He's up there, he's saying, "Debbie, never dig a dollar hole for a $10 tree." No. Mr. Renish, the upholsterer, had been a Holocaust survivor who spent his remaining years taking off the past and covering it with something new. Measure twice and cut once. Mr. Whistler, the iris hybridizer. I hadn't known that he was widowed before I was even born. His wife had died young of cancer, and her name was Iris. And those word associations that he taught me to remember the parts of the flowers, that's called a mnemonic device. And I used it a lot when I was in hort school to learn all of the Latin names of plants. Thank you, Mr. Whistler. Mr. Manor, the junk man, he was found to have been a very wealthy man when he died. Watch the nickels and the dollars take care of themselves. And old Enos Holler, I hadn't known he was Greek, and that his sons, whom I knew as Sock and Cy, their names were Socrates and Cyrus. And that old brown dog, his name wasn't Play-Doh. It was Plato.
Oh my goodness, I'm all thrown off. Thank you so much, Deb. Let's give her another big round of applause. And a little round of applause for all the men. Yeah. Thank you. Let's be ready to welcome our next storyteller. Alexandria Avens is a Bronx, New York, born and raised mother of four remarkable humans, a grandmother of one mini human, four cats, two dogs. She's the lead vocalist for her local cover band, Not Yet. Mm-hmm. We can give Not Yet a round of applause. They've done some cool things on this stage right here. And a proud resident of Kankakee for 8 years and counting. Let's welcome Alexandria Avens to the stage.
Thanks, Bill. Hi, everybody. I'm having a good time. Is everybody enjoying this? I'm having a good time. Shout out to Bill for bringing this to Kankakee. And thank you for inviting me to do this. It was actually right there on the corner of that bar right there that I met Bill for the first time. Skylar, our beautiful bartender, introduced us. I think Flanagan's had just kind of opened up and there was nobody in here. It was early in the day. And Bill and I were just sitting there talking. And he asked me, as most people do, after I told him that I was from New York, he said, how the hell did you end up in Kankakee? So I told him my story. And I think he liked it so much that he invited me to come here and tell the same story. So here we go. How the hell did I end up in Kankakee? Well, so there was a boy, we'll call him Chad, okay? Chad was alluring, he was exciting, attractive, dangerous, raunchy, and he was everything that I needed at that point in my life. See, I had recently been single for a year in New York, and I came across him online. It wasn't a dating app or anything like that. It was just totally by chance. We came across each other, and that's it. We fell full force in love. And during this time in New York, and you know, I was ready for change. Recently single. My two oldest kids, they graduated high school, and they were getting ready to go off and be on their own. And my two younger ones, they were still with me, and we were just kind of figuring out what's going to be the next step. I wanted to get out of the Bronx. I wanted to get out of the hustle, the bustle, the congestion. It was crowded. We lived in apartments. My whole life lived in an apartment. People above you, people below you, next to you. You're sharing, you know exactly what your next door neighbor is cooking, you know, for dinner. And, you know, we share each other's rodents and other things. And I was ready to go. And so I was thinking somewhere, you know, a suburb, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New Jersey, somewhere close to the people that I know, that I've known my entire life. But Chad came along, and he said, come here. I said, where? Kankakee. Kankakee, what? He said, yeah, come to Kankakee. I'm like, no, I'm not coming to Kankakee. No way. Back and forth, we went with this. I came and visited Kankakee a couple of times. And I was like, okay, you know what? I like it here. I think, you know, I think we're going to do this. I asked my kids, my son, in normal fashion, my son will answer. So I was like, all right, cool. And I asked my youngest daughter, and she said, let's do it, Mom. Adventure time. I said, all right, let's go. So here I am, moving to Kankakee, uproot my kids. My two oldest ones, they said, Mom, ain't nobody got no time for no Kankakee. And they stayed in New York and came here with my two younger ones and moved in with Chad, and we lived happily ever after. No. It didn't work out. Okay. No. So Chad and I stayed together for about 2 years. The first 2 years that I lived here in Kankakee, it was great. The first year, I lived off of unemployment, and I made my rounds, and I went out exploring. I fell in love with downtown Kankakee, absolutely smitten with it. And unemployment ran out, and I had to get a job. So interview after interview, shot down, very discouraged. Last interview I went on, same attitude. I was just like, they're not going to hire me. I go in here. I walk in. There's a few employees sitting around. And I sit over here, and I fill out my job application. I drop my pen. And somehow, I managed, in the process of picking up this pen, I knocked my head into the shelf and knocked over business cards, paper clips, pens, everything scattered everywhere. And I was mortified. And I look around and I'm like, yeah. And one employee that was there, she got up and she comes over just to come and help me. I said, no. No, I'm all right, thanks. And she said, okay. I said, I got it. As I'm picking this stuff up, like, these big-haired ain't gonna hire me. Should I leave? Should I just go? And I'm like, screw it. I'm here. I'm gonna write it out. And I did. I did the interview and everything. Lo and behold, they call me. And I'm still employed there to this day. Turned out, thank you. Turned out that one of those big-haired actually went to her boss and said, you need to hire her. She just embarrassed herself, and she handled it like a champ. And boom, I was hired. That's the big-haired right over there. In finding this job, I actually found the big-haired actually not only landed me this job, but she actually also ended up being the best friend that I've ever had in my life. Along with her, thank you. Along with her and other employees that I met there that I now consider family, we hang out at work together, and we hang out on the weekends together. And I'm very grateful for what I found here. And furthermore, one day I'm at this job, walking around by the vending machines. I'm singing a song to myself. I think we were messing around. And I think it was Bohemian Rhapsody. And one of the guys that work in the shop, he comes over. He says, "You sing?" I said, "Yeah, I sing karaoke." And he's like, "You want to try for a band?" I'm like, A band? See, we don't have that kind of thing in the Bronx, okay? We live in apartment buildings. We hang out on stoops, okay? We don't have garages, all right? We don't have drums in a building? You crazy. No, that will never happen. And so the idea of a band was just foreign to me. So I was like, yeah, I would love to try out for a band. So here I go, trying out for this band. Sang a few songs, and turns out that they liked me so much that they called one of their guitarist friends that wasn't there for the audition. They told him to come through, and I was introduced to the members of the band called Not Yet, and that is who we are now, and that's my guitarist over there. And through Not Yet, I met more extended family that I did not expect to find here. So let's circle around back to Chad. No, it didn't work out. We went our separate ways, but he played his part on my personal journey. He brought me here from New York to a place called Kankakee at a time where this place called Kankakee is thriving with creativity. It is screaming to be heard here. You can see it, you can feel it in the streets, you can see it in the people. And I'm so lucky to have gotten here at the time that I did, to find the people that I have found and to be embraced by these same people. So shout out to Kankakee. Why the hell Kankakee? Why the hell not?
Oh my goodness, I'm now like, not that I wasn't inspired to be in Kankakee before, but oh my goodness, Alexandria, thank you so much. That felt great. Our next storyteller said, "Wait, Bill, don't read that stuff I wrote. Don't read that stuff I wrote." Actually, another person who I thought, oh my goodness, when it comes to moving to a new place and not having everything figured out yet, and then saying, you know what? I'm going to jump right in here and do all sorts of things and jump in and be the person who's at the music festival all day long and who digs into the bands and like gets excited about it and plays basketball with people here and just makes himself part of the community. So without giving any of his story away, which would have happened in your bio, we are just going to welcome to the stage a new resident to Kankakee and a friend of ours, Terry Streetman.
Looks way different from up here. I've been this tall since I was like 6 years old. It's a weird childhood.
How's that?
That'll be perfect. It hides more of my face. Hello. I'm just gonna jump right into it. I don't know if I can do an intro without like throwing up on the stage. So if you've ever wondered what it might be like to be a secret agent and have to lie to maintain a secret identity, or maybe to be a cartoon character and get to get into all sorts of fun hijinks, or just what it feels like to walk into a room and be the most popular person in the room. If you've wondered any of that, I highly recommend becoming a mascot. So we're gonna set our scene all the way back in the year 1992. We were in beautiful, sunny California at the happiest place on earth, Disneyland. everybody's having a great time, right? Riding rides, eating overpriced concessions, everybody's having a blast. Except for one person, a 6-year-old having a complete mental breakdown. Screaming, crying, covered in snot, I'm having a bad time. This place is too big, it's too full of people, I don't know, it's too loud. I'm not having fun. And in the middle of all this, I look up and there he is, Goofy. And this cartoon character that I've loved my whole short young life has been plucked from the TV and placed in front of me, larger than life. And not only that, but he's looking right at me. Or at least I think he is. It's really hard to see through the tears and the snot. But in any case, Goofy walks over and gets down on one knee and puts his arms out for a hug. And little 6-year-old me wraps my arms around him. And for just a second, I'm not thinking about how big and scary and noisy this place is. It's just me and this cartoon character who somehow has come into the real world and is comforting me. And so that hug changed the course of the trip for me. I did have a good time. I had a blast. And it also kind of changed the course of my whole life. So to understand that, we have to skip forward a whole lot of years. Now it's 2007. We're on the campus of Bowling Green State University, and I'm not a panicky, neurotic 6-year-old anymore. I'm a panicky, neurotic college student because I'm a middle child and that's part of the deal. But I'm in college now and I'm trying to find my place and figure out where I fit in. And I'm doing okay, right? I've got some friends, I'm involved in some activities, I go to all the sporting events. But I still kind of feel out of place, like I don't know where I belong. And I feel like that except when Freddy and Frida are around. Freddy and Frida, of course, are the mascots at Bowling Green State University, a pair of anthropomorphized peregrine falcons, nailed that word. They are a brother and sister pair, one of the few male and female mascot pairs in NCAA Division I athletics. And when they're around, I feel welcome, and I feel seen, and I feel like I'm at home. And so it comes to be that one day I'm at a basketball game, and Freddy and Frida are there, and I go, you know what, I want to do that. I think I want to be Freddy. So I fill out an application, and I go through a very long and very rigorous interview and tryout process. And I am fortunate enough to be selected to be Freddy Falcon. I spend a year in this role. And being a mascot is weird, which I don't have to tell you. It's objectively weird. But, like, it's weird in ways you don't think of until you've done it. Essentially, I spent a year running around a college campus in what boils down to be a mobile sauna made of fur. Like, that's the best way I can describe it. It's gross. It's weird. But I also gave, like, hundreds and thousands of hugs to complete strangers. And sometimes even weirder, to good friends and people I did know who didn't know that it was me, because when you're in the suit, it's a secret who the mascot is. It's weird. But it's not just weird because it's also magic, right? When you can walk into a football stadium and command the attention of tens of thousands of people, and make them feel happy and make them feel good when things aren't going so well on the field. Our football team was bad, y'all. It's not good. That's magic. But it's not just the big picture stuff, right? It's also this granular thing of, for example, one day over the summer, I'm walking across campus. It's a hot day. It's a long week. I'm not feeling it. But when you're in the suit, you step out the door and you're on stage. So I am bouncing across campus with a pep in my step that I do not feel. And I see a college student walking toward me, and their head is down, their arms are at their sides. They're like kicking dirt like a cartoon of a sad person. Like, you can picture this, right? And they look up and they see me and they kind of crumple a little bit. And they say, Freddie, can I have a hug? And in that moment, I didn't see a college student. I saw a 6-year-old having a panic attack at Disneyland. This place is new and too big and too scary and full of people I don't know and classes I don't understand. And so I put my arms out for a hug. And they grabbed on and they held on tight and for a long time. There's this rule that Disney has where the mascot does not let go first. If a child hugs you, that hug goes on until the child is done. And so I held on until they were ready. They let go and they stepped back. They looked up at me with tears in their eyes and they said, "Freddie, it has been a bad week." And I knew that week. I was having that week. College is hard, man. You're figuring out who you are. I'd had that week. And they said, "But you know what, Freddie? You just made my whole day. And that's magic. You can make somebody's day. You can change somebody's whole week. You can change somebody's life. That's magic." And what I've learned in the years since then is that magic stays with you when the suit comes off. Because it does. End of the year, basketball game, halftime, the head comes off. And your friends get to see, "Oh, that's why Terry's been such a bad friend all year. That's why he told such dumb lies and didn't show up to anything. He was the mascot all year. It's fun." But that magic stays with you. There's a saying that we have in the mascot community. the character... The character you have is greater than the character you play. And what we mean by that is that who you are, even though you're playing a role, that comes through in the suit. But what I've realized more in the years since then is the opposite is true as well, because that character sticks with you. There's a lot of stuff I've done in my life that I would not have been able to do or had the courage to do if it weren't for what Freddie Falcon taught me. I wouldn't be standing here today if it weren't for Freddie Falcon. I can say that with certainty. Because once you've done the Soulja Boy in front of 30,000 people, we all... You can Google it later. Once you've done that, a job interview is way less scary. Like, I learned so much from my time as Freddie. And so I will always, always be grateful for that time. And for what I learned. And I'll always be grateful for Goofy, who saw a screaming, crying, snot-covered six-year-old, and instead of turning and running the opposite direction, like most of us would do, took a minute, stepped outside of his comfort zone, and made that little six-year-old feel seen and feel comforted and feel safe. And so if you ever have the opportunity, it's rare, but if you do, I highly recommend becoming a mascot.
How cool is that? Do you want to be a mascot now? I do. I kind of wanted to before, but I want to even more now. I already am? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Terry. Let's give Terry a big round of applause. Going on the theme of not totally reading the bio, because you can read it yourself. I knew all of these people who were going to be giving their stories tonight, except D'Amica Rosenthal. There she is, D'Amica Rosenthal. And I said to a good friend of mine, Leah, who's sitting over here, I told her about the idea. She's like, you gotta have D'Amica. Like, that's the person. I'm like, oh, I trust your opinion. And I'm excited about why you're so excited about this personality, this person, this energy. So let's welcome to the stage D'Amica Rosenthal.
Thank you. Good, thank you. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little nervous. My friend Leah wanted me to do this, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it. So I'm gonna be a bit vulnerable, because people are used to me smiling and this happy and this sunshine. So I'm going to tell a story, add a little of my personality, but be a bit vulnerable with it also. I think one of the biggest disservices that is done in our life is that we're not taught how to deal with grief. I think grief changes you in ways that you can't imagine, and we just really don't know how to deal with it until it comes. So I'm going to speak about how from September 2023 to November of 2023, I lost three very important men who were great on my journey in life. My high school ex-boyfriend was killed September of 2023. I was at work and I got a text. He's dead. I looked up at my coworker who looked at me and he said, "Are you okay?" I said, "No," but I continued to work. I got off work, and the first place that I wanted to go was to my ex-boyfriend's mom. I just knew in that moment that she would be the only person whose pain was worse than mine, and I had to get to her. When I finally got to her, I just broke down and cried in her arms. It was a moment of, man, I cannot believe that he's gone. I was talking to my friends the next couple of days, like, y'all, why am I so sad? Like, I'm still sleeping with this man. But I shared so many first experiences with him. It was something like just the reel of all of our moments just began playing. So while I'm trying to deal with my high school ex-boyfriend being killed and all of these things, November comes. My father is in the hospital and he's sick. Of course, for days, I didn't want to go up there. I didn't have a relationship with my father. I was a product of an adulterous relationship, so my father and I never had anything. I always knew him growing up. Always knew my sisters, but him and I just never had a relationship. I called my friend and I told her, my dad wants everybody to come up to the hospital and I don't know how to feel. I don't think that I should go. Her first words were, "Well, Damika, have you forgiven him?" I said, "Yes. I don't think I would be able to have a relationship with my youngest child father had I not." So she says, "Damika, maybe it's for him." That's why it's extremely important to have people in your life who aren't just your cheerleaders. They're your friends. They're going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. I go up to this hospital with all intention to be a support system to my sisters. I get up to the hospital, I get in the room, I'm looking at him, he looking at me, I'm looking at him, he looking at me. Before I leave, I remember giving him a kiss on the forehead, and he said, "Take care of yourself." And I said, "You don't want to take care of yourself, I'm walking up out of this hospital right now." So when he passed, I get to this funeral. And they were trying to hide the obituary from me. I didn't understand. Finally get to see the obituary. My name's not on it. My sister's name's not on it. He had three kids with my mother. And he had another son that was from a relationship, an adulterous relationship as well. All four of our names were left off the obituary, as if we didn't even exist. So I walk up to the casket, I just look, and I walked away because everything in my mind wanted me to flip the casket over. But I knew I could not do that because I just had too much to lose. So before I could even get through that, my grandfather passed away on the day after Thanksgiving. This was not my mom's biological father, but that is who raised her. He never treated me any different. To him, I was his grandchild. Blood could not make us any closer. He always made me feel so special. My granddaughter is so smart. My granddaughter is this. My granddaughter is that. We bumped heads all the time because we both stubborn, but it never took our love away from each other. So that is the journey that I'm on right now, my place in life. Three different men. Two who chose to love me. One who was supposed to love me, but I don't think he did. And so sometimes when I speak to people about this, they can't understand why I never shed a tear when my father passed. How do you shed a tear for a stranger? How do you shed a tear for someone who was supposed to love you, but did they love you? And so I've been using that as my motivation. As my motivation to continue to be better, to continue to do better. I sometimes sit and I think about each of these men and the different roles that they played in my life and how they intertwined in my life in different ways. So I just want to say, choose those who choose you. The people that choose you will be the ones that will help you make it through. Choose those who choose you.
You can clap more for Damika. Clap more for Damika. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Well, hey, let's do this again next month. May 14th is the second Tuesday, and we'll have a whole new lineup of storytellers, local and maybe some not, but like just be able to stop and listen to each other for a little while. Feels pretty good, doesn't it? So thank you. Let's give a big round of applause to all of our storytellers. They did a phenomenal job. I'm really blown away. Thank you all so much. I couldn't have imagined this going any better. And hopefully next time we'll all gather back here again and do the same sort of thing and connect with each other. So Skylar, thank you so much. A big thanks to the Kankakee Public Library, who's a partner on this project. Thanks to the Kankakee Public Library. Thanks to Kankakee Podcast. So if our storytellers approve, if they like the way this worked for them and they're open with that, you know, there's something about this just living in the space where it lived when it goes told, which is kind of cool. But there's also something about like, hey, let's let other people know about the kind of thing we're doing. So Jake Lamore from Kankakee Podcast, he's a phenomenal advocate for our community. And if our storytellers are open to letting their stories be part of a future episode, that's what he does. So thank you, Jake, for helping out with this. And Brian, thank you for helping out. They're pretty cool thing that people do here in our community. But yeah, hang out more, talk to each other, and try not to interrupt each other for like the first 3 minutes of a story. Let somebody tell a story for a little while, but I know we're all itching to tell our own story now. So, but again, this has been really cool. Thank you so much. We'll see you again, hopefully next month, May 14th.
You see what I meant about each story being so unique in their own way and kind of striking you in the heart in a different way as well? I could not think, it was so hard to think of a favorite story from that first Yarn Factory listeners event. But, you know, Terry Streetman, his story about being a mascot, and there's just things that you don't even think about that a mascot must have to go through. And also Deb Terrell, who told such an incredible story about her childhood growing up, where she grew up, and how all those elder men in her life played it such an important role and taught her things that she used or uses every day in her life. That was incredibly moving. Alex or Alexandra, her story about coming to the Bronx in New York and coming here to Kankakee. And her story just kind of reminded me of just how lucky we are to live where we live here in Kankakee County. I think sometimes we take that for granted, and people like Alexandra remind us of that. And then the trials and tribulations that D'Amica had to go through. Thank you so much for listening to this very first edition of Yarn Factory Listeners. I hope we were able to capture the essence and the vibe of what the event is all about. And I hope you can join us for a future Yarn Factory Listeners event. If you're listening to this before Tuesday, May 14th, 2024, that's going to be the next event. Again, at Flanagan's Irish Pub on Schuyler Avenue, in the basement of the Majestic. Starts at 7 p.m. It's absolutely free. Until further notice, we're going to be doing this the second Tuesday of every month at Flanagan's at 7 p.m. So I really hope you can join us. Thank you so much again to Bill Yonka for letting Kankakee Podcast be a part of this. Flanagan's Irish Pub, the Kankakee Public Library, also Skylar Brinkman at Flanagan's, and a special shout out to Brian Prairie of Pathfinder for coming to that very first event with me and taking some incredible pictures of that night. And most importantly, thank you to all of the storytellers. You can follow Kankakee Podcast on social media to stay up to date with these events. And also, Yarn Factory Listeners does have a Facebook page as well that you can like and follow. I'm Jake Lamore. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to see you at a future Yarn Factory Listeners event. This river can-